And welcome to Bird's Eye View, the Philadelphia Inquirer podcast. I'm Jeff McLean of the Philadelphia Inquirer here along with Zach Berman, also of the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we missed you last week because we were in Phoenix, Arizona for the owners' meetings, but we are back in Philadelphia. And, you know, Zach, let's talk a little bit about what happened at the owners' meeting. Sure. It wasn't like very eventful. In fact, it might have been the most boring owners' meeting I've been to since I've been on the Eagles beat. Jeffrey Lurie, though, did talk, and that in itself is worth talking about because it was the first time that the Eagles owner had a news conference in a year. And I think as far back as anyone can remember since he owned the team, that's the longest he's gone without talking. Initial impressions of Jeffrey?
Yeah, so I thought it was a good owner's meeting for the purpose you said, is that Jeffrey Lurie spoke. Now, it wasn't groundbreaking, earth-shattering in the sense of when Chip Kelly used to speak at those, it was a major event.
Yeah, we'll give a little bit of the yes, setting with
but,
Doug versus
but
Chip.
No, as for what Jeffrey Lurie said, it was the first time he spoke to reporters since they acquired Carson Wentz and since they hired Joe Douglas, and those were two major points of emphasis from him. First off, they're all in on Carson Wentz. That's abundantly clear, and all the hopes of this franchise are the fact that they found a franchise quarterback. I actually found it interesting when Lurie said that you can rationalize any structure if you have a quarterback. And the reason that's relevant is because there's been so much discussion in recent years about should the coach have the power, should the GM have the power, should the coach and the GM get along, how do you structure this? And what Lurie was basically saying is if you have a quarterback, none of that, you know, if you don't have a quarterback, none of that matters.
Right. So it's convenient that he says it now, though.
Exactly. Exactly.
Every year it's something different.
You wrote that.
I want to give people a little bit of what it's like there in Phoenix, Arizona, and just how it was with Jeff, too, as well. So 2 years prior, we had been at the Biltmore Hotel. This is in Phoenix, Arizona. It's obviously a very swanky, old money type of hotel. And so 2 years ago, this was after they had the front office shakeup. Howie out in the equipment room, smelling jocks, and Chip Kelly in charge of personnel. And Jeff had not spoken after they made that official that announcement on January 2nd, I think it was.
Yep.
Friday which night. So Jeff hadn't spoken for 2 months, and finally we were going to get him at the owners' meetings, and the Eagles did, I thought in retrospect, a poor job of setting it up. They had a camera set up outside. We're all baking in the sun. Jeff came out there, and we just kind of pounded Jeff for about a half hour on these questions, and I thought he actually handled it pretty well, all things considering. But this was totally different. It was more of a relaxed atmosphere. It was late in the afternoon on Tuesday. It was a table. He sat down. There were like maybe a 10 Philly reporters, a few national ones. So they wanted a little more of a casual kind of conversation with Jeff. And I think that kind of played to maybe his strengths. There weren't any kind of gold standard type of statements from Jeff, although per usual there were, you know, phrases that Jeff seems to always kind of pull out of his butt. This one was optionality.
Well, that's an ode to Sam Hinkie. Sam Hinkie said, you know, after the Michael Carter Williams trade, he had that press conference where he said he talked about optionality, and
right.
And so Jeffrey Lurie said the same thing, and
that was in reference to your question about Band-Aids. Oh no!
I didn't ask about the Band-Aids.
What was it reference to?
It was basically talking Bradford. It was talking about signing Bradford last year.
No. I don't remember what it was. It was about, you keep talking about building the team through the draft, the long view, and then here you are spending all this money in free agency, Alshon Jeffrey, and he's like, well, you still have to have some sort of optionality. I think that's what he was referring to.
Yes. Right. But it was relevant in his discussion of the Bradford contract. Because
he loved.
What he was saying was that the way they structured that contract allowed them to make that trade, and he went as far as to say that they bought the draft pick.
Do you buy that?
Well,
I buy that they structured the deal so that it would be
that they can
some
it.
Leeway in either yeah. year, but the whole buying of it, they never thought that.
But the I don't want to say the fallacy there, but the problem with that was that if he got hurt, then you wouldn't have been able to move him, and you know if Teddy Bridgewater didn't get hurt before the season, he would have been your starting quarterback this year. If Bradford got hurt in week three of the season, they would have cut him this offseason as opposed to trading him. So, yeah, the way they structured it allowed them to trade him, but I don't think that they thought they were going to net a first-round pick.
No, in hindsight, he can say that, and as we both said at the time, because the Browns had basically said that's what they had done in the
Brock Osweiler
trade, I think he wanted to sound like, oh, well, we thought of that. We were the first ones to think of that.
Yeah.
Real quick, let me go through each. He spoke at length about all the key pieces. You mentioned Wentz. Aside from, we were saying the night before, they have a big cocktail party every Monday night, the owners' meeting. So you get to hang out with all these NFL people, Jeff included, Howie, not really Howie, but Jeffrey, Don Smolensky, Joe Douglas, Doug Peterson, in a more informal setting, off the record. We were saying then that how do you think Jeff is going to come out when asked about Wentz? Is he going to be like, this is the guy, this is our franchise quarterback, we're going to possibly win a Super Bowl with him? Or was he going to be, temper expectations and be like, okay, we don't know, it's only 1 year. And it was something in between.
He tried doing both, frankly.
Yeah, but I think he was stronger on the, and I know, I know that. They're over the moon for this kid. I mean, they think he's the second coming. They certainly have higher expectations with him than even when they had with Donovan McNabb.
You think so? Really?
I do.
Interesting. I was 13 years old then, so I was just reading the coverage. I wasn't covering it. But that's interesting. That
different time, imagine if they got an Alshon Jeffrey or an Alshon Jeffrey type of player for Donovan in his second season as opposed to...
They got John Runyon. I mean, they made him, the highest paid right tackle in the NFL
true.
Then.
That's
but,
true.
Yeah, but
I mean,
they didn't
prioritize. You knew the skill position was always...
Sure. Sure, that was... You're right about that.
All right, what'd you think about him on Doug?
I think what he said was accurate. I don't think he gave this real strong, hearty endorsement of Doug Peterson. I thought what he said about Doug's relationship with his players and the fact that he inherited a locker room that... was a bit fractured. I think that was accurate, but he didn't talk about really Doug's play calling, game management, things like that. He really focused on the cultural aspect of it, and that's one part of being a head coach. Another part is what you do during those 3 hours on Sunday.
Right. I tried to follow up on that. It was very difficult to get a question, and I just wanted to ask him specifically that Dallas game.
Yeah. Yes.
But I mean, that's why they hired Doug. And I wrote this in my story off of Doug's press conference. They want Doug to control the locker room. They want Doug to get the players to play for him. They want him to deal with the quarterback and game planning and calling the offense, but not be the only guy involved in all three of those facets. John DeFilippo and Frank Wright as well. And they want him to not screw up game management. And I thought maybe he was kind of 50-50 on that last season, maybe a little better than worse.
I thought early in the year he was
fine. Yeah, he was. I mean, Jeff talked about the risk averse,
a big
game,
emphasis
game management
from,
when it came to going for it on fourth down.
A big emphasis from Lurie was his coaching staff and the fact that Jeff thinks he built a good coaching staff, and Lurie compared it to Andy Reid's staff from 1999,
right.
how that was a big part of Andy's early success.
Yeah, but they would have never. He would have never said that about Andy back then.
Sure,
because Andy he's a coach. I mean, I just feel like with Jeff, and as you mentioned, there wasn't a wholehearted endorsement, and Jeff is just usually kind of hyperbolic when it comes to his own employees all the time. And with Doug, it was like, the plan was, to get Carson, they identified getting a quarterback, but it was like they. It wasn't like Doug. It was also John and Frank. And then it was like, and in the same, in that answer about Doug, he's like, but we got Carson Wentz, and what a great job Howie did. And hey, how about Sam Bradford? How about trading Sam? Another thing that Howie did. It was like, I just felt like Doug kind of got short-shifted there by Jeffrey. Whereas, okay, moving along to Howie.
He's very
complete
high on
confidence.
Exactly. And he really tried to distinguish between football operations and player personnel. That being said, Howie Roseman still has the final say on on the draft picks, on the personnel signings. So it's not just organizing the football operations department. But a big thing, a big message from Lurie was bringing in Joe Douglas and how important that is for Howie to have that type of personnel guy. Now, I'm curious to see how it looks in practice, because we've heard similar things about Tom Gamble. We've heard similar things about Ed Manowitz. But ultimately, it's the person who has their finger on the button that matters most.
Right. It's still Howie's show.
Exactly. That's my point.
It's still Howie's show. And you know, I wrote about Joe Douglas on Sunday as well. And you know, with Jeff, I think he's trying to kind of divert attention a little away from Howie. And they want to make it seem like, okay, we realized and he has realized that maybe some of the flaws he has in his game, and we brought in this football guy to kind of correct him in the draft. My thing is, you know, if Joe is actually building the draft board, is Howie going to stick to it?
Yeah. I mean, I hate that term, football guy.
I mean, I'm not using it.
Yeah, no. I mean,
Jeff used it 2 years ago.
With Chip, yeah.
With Chip.
Exactly.
I mean, his own boy. Yeah. Chip wanted a football guy.
Yeah, so I'm not coming down on you. I'm coming down more on like the...
I hate that term. Well, remember, I hate it too. Remember Chip, after Trent Baalke, after he got hired by the 49ers, I'm with football guys. Trent Baalke.
Yeah, exactly.
And Baalke and him are great job those football guys did in San Francisco. But and Jed York is definitely no football guy.
But they're really trying... I mean, to your point, and you're 100% accurate on this, they've really tried to build this image of Joe Douglas as everything's fine because we have Joe Douglas, who worked for Ozzie News,
who has no record.
Yeah.
He's never had his name attached to any draft pick.
Sure.
And that's not his fault. He's just a guy working his way up.
He had 1 year as director of college scouting with the Chicago Bears.
Otherwise, an area scout.
Now, I like Joe personally. I've enjoyed the chance to get to know him a bit over this past year, but the jury, we still don't know how he is.
He talks a good game
in this role,
right? He talks a good game when he talks about players. Yep. It sounds like he's got the right plan. They keep talking about best available player over need. I like all that, but is Howie gonna be like, let me show you what I can pull off? Here comes another four team trade where I can take this second round pick and turn it into 3 fourth round picks in 2000. I mean, like, that's what I'm always, you know, you look at the 49ers, you look at the Packers, you look at the Steelers, you look at their drafts over the last decade. Plenty of times they don't do anything. They just pick their 8 best guys in each round, and that's it. And then they develop Super Bowl
caliber
teams.
I'm putting you on the spot here, so you don't have to know the stat offhand, but you had a great number in one of your recent columns about the amount of Pro Bowlers that Howie's picked and the amount of Pro Bowlers that the Cowboys picked.
So 5 since Howie became general manager in 2010. Eagles have had 3 draft picks go to 5 Pro Bowls. Fletcher Cox 2, Jason Kelce 2, and Nick Foles 1, which is kind of a fluke. The Cowboys, in comparison, have had 21. There's more to it. I mean, the Cowboys haven't won a playoff game over that span, have they?
No, they have.
They won one.
The DeMarco Murray's last year, they won one.
Right. Yeah. So it's not like they're winning championships either. Mm-hmm. But I think they have a stronger base right now, obviously, clearly, than the Eagles. And it's a lot of it's that they've hit on first round picks.
Exactly.
First round picks and second round picks especially. And that's what the Eagles have not been able to do.
You're absolutely right about that. Now they had earlier picks, but when you look at this Eagles roster and you're talking about the need at edge rusher, for instance, what jumps out there, they spent a first round pick on Marcus Smith, you know, and you look at cornerback. They drafted Eric Rowe in the second round and they traded him. And you can go on down the list. A lot of their needs, wide receiver was a need they plugged in free agency. They drafted Nelson Agholor in the first round. Now, that wasn't Howie's pick.
Right.
But ultimately, if you hit on these first round picks, you don't have these glaring needs years later.
Absolutely. Okay, so I probably spent a little too much time on Lurie, but Doug Peterson did talk as well. They always have a coach's breakfast. NFC on Wednesday, AFC on Tuesday. Some of the NFC coaches got it in on Tuesday night because the meetings were closing a day early. But Doug sat down with a bunch of us, and it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's totally different with Doug.
Exactly.
So like Zach and I, we stayed at a hotel just off of the Biltmore, and we're talking, okay, what time do we need to show up for Doug, and with Chip, it used to be like you'd have to get there like an hour and a half. And these breakfasts start early; they're 7 a.m., 7:15 a.m. breakfasts. So we'd have to get there like an hour and a half earlier because I always wanted the seat either next to Chip or across from him, so he had to look me in the eye. But you knew Chip was so popular, everyone around the country would want to go sit at his table, and to get a seat at the table, you'd have to wake up super early. The nights and days, they're long at the owners' meeting, so you're not getting a lot of sleep. But with Doug, we're like, nah, we're okay if we show up around 7 o'clock. I mean, he had a full crowd at his table.
But like, I used to go back and read those Chip transcripts, you know, a day later, 2 days later, and I'm like, I have 10, 15 stories here. You know, he addressed.
How about last year? Yeah. He wasn't even coaching the Eagles, and it was like it was all a bunch of Eagles guys at his table, and it was like for 20 minutes, you know, would not give in, and finally just bam.
So like we looked at each other. We looked at each other after Doug this year, and we're like, what do we take away from that?
What we got? Nothing. I kept trying to ask him about Alshon Jeffrey. Nothing. And I don't know if he was just trying to kind of stonewall us or. As I sometimes think, I don't know if there's a lot there.
No, I just think the where he has he's very involved with the quarterbacks. We know that, but I don't think he has a big role in personnel and who they're bringing in. And Chip obviously was huge with Chip.
We've talked about Chase Daniel
on here. No, we have not.
I thought we did. The week before we left, but that was
it wasn't official yet by then, I don't think.
Okay. But that was clearly Doug's.
That was Doug's guy.
Yeah. And that was
Doug's Doug. That was Doug's Doug.
And the contract was bad. A lot of that falls on Howie Roseman as well. But again, it just seems like they're like, okay, Doug, stay away from the personal end of business this offseason. I mean, there wasn't a quarterback to pick, but like, I mean. I asked about Alshon Jeffrey, and I couldn't even get a scouting report. He's like, "Oh, we keep that in house." I asked him at one point late in the press conference. I said, "You know, how attached are you to Carson Wentz's success?"
That was a good question, and that was a good answer too.
And that was an okay answer he gave.
Yeah,
he
said the coach and the quarterback.
It's all about the quarterback. Yeah, yep. So he agreed.
Yeah. Now, in terms of some. Lineup stuff, which I know fans are always interested in. It's clear how high they are on Isaac Seumalo.
Yeah.
When he was asked about Alan Barber being the left guard, the first thing he mentioned is that they want to get Isaac in the mix. So that's going to be interesting. Now, he said he expects Jason Kelce and Michael Kendricks on the roster. We'll see if that actually happens.
I'd say at this point, I think it's more likely that Kelce's on this team in September than Kendricks. I think Kendricks is almost gone.
They're gonna need to find a replacement.
As good as gone. Yeah.
Reuben
Foster, maybe.
Interesting name there.
We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, and he basically confirmed that Bo Allen's gonna have an opportunity to take on a much bigger role this year.
Right.
But
so many things can happen until the start of the season in terms of like the draft and who they bring in. And I don't think anything is written in stone in terms of Bo Allen starting. But yeah, I mean, there was, I guess, not much else from Doug Peterson.
No.
The Eagles did make a couple of signings at the owners' meetings, and that was the only opportunity we had to speak to Howie Roseman, who for the first time really didn't kind of talk to reporters at this annual event. But Joe and Howie did meet with them after they signed Chris Long, pass rusher, played with the Patriots last year, obviously with the Rams in a 4-3 scheme as an end for many years. What do you make of that? Trade, 32-year-old, two-year deal, but it's probably just essentially a 1-year deal.
The signing is, I mean, in a vacuum, Chris Long's a good player who can give you a lot of what Connor Barwin gave you last year at a lower price. So in a vacuum, I like the acquisition. Big picture, I don't, because Vinnie Curry's already going to take a step up. So right now, you're looking at your top three defensive ends at least. Two 29-year-olds next year in Graham and Curry, and then a 32-year-old in Chris Long. I thought that third defensive end spot, which, because I'm assuming Curry's going to take on a bigger role, that third defensive end spot could have been a rookie, could have been a younger player. I didn't see why signing Chris Long was essential to this team.
In some ways, it feels like he's going to fill in for Barwin in terms of like that character guy up front.
Yeah.
Leader up front.
That seems to be the way
Chris Long is certainly that guy. He's always been that guy over his career. So I think you fill that vacancy. I don't know how much he has left in the tank. I mean, he was okay last year. I mean, it was a different scheme. It's not one, obviously. He doesn't have his hand in the ground. He's not always rushing forward like he used to do in St. Louis.
Well, so the thing last year is they moved him inside a lot, and he wants to be on the edge. That kind of stood out.
True.
Talking to him. But he's 32 years old. He said that he didn't miss a game, didn't miss a practice last year. When he got cut by the Rams, he had some injury history there. So that jumps out. The fact that he's healthy. But again, when you're looking at the direction of this team, it's a good player to bring in, I think, if you're trying to make the playoffs next year, if you're trying to make a push, because I think he helps your defensive line.
Right.
I don't see how adding a 32-year-old defensive end is what this franchise needs to do in terms of where they're going.
Right. Longview.
Exactly.
Jeff said it himself. I don't get the signing either. Patrick Robinson, I'm okay with that because they have no one there. It sounds like Ron Brooks is going to return. Yep. They have Jalen Mills. They have Dwayne a couple Gratz. Other Dwayne yeah. Gratz, who they signed late last year.
After the draft, that depth chart's going to look a lot different. And Patrick Robinson is a guy with starting experience on a one-year deal. But again, I think that was just to have a body there.
Right.
You know, you don't know what that depth chart's going
to
look like.
Right, and you have to protect yourself when the draft comes because exactly. You don't want to be pushing needs when it comes to you and whatever round it is. And that's a good segue to looking at the draft. Just to kind of, well, obviously get into more detail.
Getting closer.
As yep. we get closer. We should have time to do a podcast every week, I think, leading up into
sign me up, the draft. I'm all in.
Yeah, maybe we'll look a little more specifically each day at a guy. But my question to you is, you know, I keep thinking cornerback or defensive end, mm-hmm. the best guy there. Now, again, they're not going to push a need, but there's a lot of depth at that spot. And if one of those guys could drop to him, one of the more elite guys, then I certainly could see them pulling the trigger. But I think I look at the cornerback spot. It seems like there's not a consensus on who the number three guy is.
Sure.
So I think Marshon Lattimore and Marlon Humphrey
yep.
will be gone by the Eagles at number 14, or could be gone.
Yeah, could be. I
you don't
I
want mean, to push that third. Like, there's no clear cut
yeah,
third guy.
Yeah, we know Lattimore's not going to be there.
Lattimore's going to go top five or six or something.
Now
maybe Humphrey, but drops.
The Sidney Jones injury really hurts there.
That changed. That changed the dynamic.
Conley from Ohio State is someone who
could be a push.
Who people
push,
like
you could be
here.
Pushing something there. Tre'Davious White.
Yeah, I wouldn't if the Eagles are thinking cornerback in the first round, I wouldn't roll out trading back a few spots to a team that wants a quarterback. There's talk now about the Texans trying to draft a quarterback early. Now I'm not usually a proponent of trading back when you're drafting that high because I think you have a chance to get a blue chip player. But if you want to get a cornerback, if there's no edge rusher that jumps out to you there, and the cornerbacks look the same at 14 than they do at 20, then that's something I'd consider.
But also, you could just kind of stand pat, take the best available guy that you like, mm-hmm. and
you mentioned Reuben Foster.
Because there's so much depth at cornerback, there's going to be quality starting caliber cornerbacks that are going to drop in the second, third round. So you may be able to get them there as well.
Let me ask you this:
I wouldn't push it.
What if a player, not at a position of need, but at a potential elite
I was going to ask you that same question. O.J. Howard.
I would do it.
I think that kid's going to be a stud.
Exactly. I would do it just because I would want blue chip player.
Or Foster.
And then figure out a way to make
it. Well, let's look at Howard first. So the Eagles probably have more depth at tight end than they do at any position.
Yes, but I don't look at Trey Burton as a traditional tight end.
No, he's kind of more of a slot.
He's a slot special teams guy.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, and Celek is probably his last year.
Yes. I mean, when Trey Burton...
But Ertz is cemented into that spot.
Yes. But you can play two tight ends.
Yeah.
You know, that's... Now, the thing is, when you play two tight end set, that takes away Jordan Matthews' value a bit because you're probably having two receivers on the field and you're not having a slot receiver.
Then you trade Jordan Matthews.
Something to think about there. I mean, I like Matthews. We've established that on this podcast. But O.J. Howard at 14 would be pretty interesting. It doesn't plug a need, but if you're talking about best available
player. If he's there, and let's say like not one of these other guys that you're loving is, and you can't trade back, you're not getting a good offer to trade back. Again, if you're saying best need,
yep.
You know, I mean, the quarterback's the only one, and there's not a great quarterback in this draft. Is the only position I think you don't address. You don't. You know, look at it in terms of the whole take the best available player philosophy. What about Reuben Foster? We talked a little bit about. They haven't drafted a linebacker in the first round since Jerry Robinson in 1979.
That's good. That's a good morsel of information there.
Although it doesn't, I mean, yeah. obviously totally different coaches and GMs yeah. over that span. But, I mean,
the players.
This yeah. group, starting with Andy Reid, Joe Banner, Howie Roseman, yeah. et cetera, they're not, they just don't like taking linebackers
the,
that high.
Reuben Foster is a really good player. You need to look into the off field there. You need to be satisfied with that. Also, you need to find what the role for him is going to be. The Eagles play so much nickel. They're going to have Jordan Hicks on the field. Nigel Bradham, at least for this year, is on the team. Again, you don't think about need, but you think about how can you use him. I think if I had to guess, I think the Eagles take an edge rusher in the first round.
Okay, so that leads us to that position. Jonathan Allen. Probably top five talent, but he's got an arthritic yeah. shoulder.
Well, the thing I like about Jonathan Allen is he's someone who...
Well, he's not an edge rusher. He's more of an inside guy, but he's a guy you can move around.
That's a need. I mean, I would want Jonathan Allen and put him right next to Fletcher Cox. And if you look at the way the Lions' defense was built with Jim Schwartz, they had Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley. Two high picks, two top right. the top 15 picks. If Jonathan Allen falls to the Eagles because of the injury, I run that card up as quickly
you
as
certainly
I can.
You certainly would want to take a look at him. Could he play like edge and could he be just kind of a hybrid? He's 6'3", 280 something, and Schwartz seems to like bigger ends.
Yeah, he's someone you can move around.
And Howie's kind of been inclined to draft.
He played in a different defense than the Eagles use at Alabama, so there's projection involved. But he's just a good player. And it's a similar argument to what the Eagles had with Fletcher Cox. I think it was Jim Schwartz last year when he got the question, Jerry Azenero said that Jerry Azenero said this about Jim Washburn said Fletcher Cox, God created him to play in Jim Washburn's defense. And Jerry Azenero said, God created Fletcher Cox to play in any defense. Well, he's that good. And that's kind of, I think Jonathan Allen can play in any defense.
Okay, so, but he more than likely won't be there. Derek Barnett's a guy I've kind of circled.
Like him a lot.
He could be gone too by 14, but really impressive pass rusher.
I mean, the thing you like about Barnett is
he's put up numbers in college.
Exactly. Too. Is he's not someone who you look at the combine and you say height, weight, speed, he has it. But you watch his production in the SEC. I believe broke Reggie White's sack record at Tennessee.
I was about to say that. I knew that.
just a good football player. That's a guy who I think would make sense for the Eagles.
Okay. Anyone else? Any other edge rushers?
So like,
could you be? Yeah. Could McKinley be pushing it?
I mean, there's thought that Takaris? he's
Takaris?
Yeah. He's better in a 3-4. A guy I like more than some others is Taco Charlton from Michigan. I mean, you're talking about physical 6'6", 270.
I like Peppers from Michigan.
Got better. I'm glad you brought up Peppers because. Peppers and
he's like this year's Shaq Thompson.
Yes, that's a good one there. And another name I'll mention in the Peppers category is Hassan Reddick from Temple. And the reason I'm putting them together is because I like guys who are versatile enough that you can put them in different positions on different downs. So when I look at Reddick, for instance, he's someone who you can put him at linebacker in base situations, and then in pass rush situations, you can line him on the edge and rush him. He can play three downs. Now
I wonder if his size is going to hurt him at this level. As an edge rusher.
Like, I think he's like 237. Like
6'1", 230 something.
But I mean, just in terms
of...
If you
got Von Miller explosive, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and so you mentioned Peppers. That's someone who can play in the box. He can play defensive backfield. You hear so much that the NFL is a matchup game. I like guys who can be used in different matchups different weeks.
Yeah, it's all about versatility. And you've heard Schwartz talk about that all last year.
Exactly.
And then real quick, wide receiver. I still think they're fine. They're still set up where they can take a guy. I think Mike Williams, it's funny how the mock draft nerds are starting to catch up on what the NFL is doing. They're like, oh, Mike Williams is dropping. No, probably not. This is probably the way the NFL has had it for a while now. But Corey Davis and John Ross are two guys I think you'd have to really consider at number 14. Ross... Davis, because of the size, you love that size. He's got the explosiveness. He can go up and get the ball. Ross, obviously because of the speed, You could take the top off of any defense. And he put up numbers at Washington. It wasn't like, yeah, this was just some one-trick pony. He did it a bunch of different ways. But you have to be worried about the injuries.
Yeah.
And the size.
Yeah, I'm not a proponent of drafting a receiver in the first round, just because in a three-year span,
I wouldn't roll it out.
I wouldn't want to spend two first-round picks and a second-round pick on a wide receiver. But if the player jumps out to you, and John Ross has an elite skill that you literally can't find. I mean, speed is so hard to find.
4.22
broke the record.
Chris Johnson's record.
Yeah. So I wouldn't kill them for the pick. I just think this defense needs players. This draft has defensive players. I think that pick should be on the defense.
Don't push a need.
I'm not pushing a need. There's value
best
there.
Available. Yeah, I don't know if Ross or Davis are the best available at 14. Okay, so that's it for us. Real quick, so just to give you a little bit of idea what the next few weeks are going to be like. So the Eagles start their off-season workout program on April 17th. So that's when all the players come back. Yep. Carson Wentz, now apparently he's going to work out with a bunch of the receivers at some point. I'm trying to find that out. Now, it's not a mandatory date,
yep.
So there'll be some players. I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Kendricks isn't in the building on April 17th.
I wouldn't expect
that. But he might be, actually, because if he gets hurt, Eagles have to pay for his contract.
That's interesting. Yeah.
He might be there just based on that alone.
He might have that hamstring injury that comes up.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect Darren Sproles. Oh, well, I shouldn't say this, but you heard
probably
Sproles
not.
Last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, he likes staying home in San Diego, exactly. And Eagles are totally okay with that. The NFL schedule, the makers of that, you don't have a set date on that, but usually I think it's going to be like that week. Is there another week before?
That's
the last week before the draft. I think it would happen that week. Doug Peterson confirmed that the Eagles are going to try and get the two LA dates, or maybe even the Seattle one. They have three West Coast trips next year. You'd like to have them back to back so you can stay out in the West Coast.
And we would like that too, matter of fact.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then the rest of the OTA schedule after the draft starts a little later this year in May for the veterans. There'll be a rookie camp before that. But we intend to keep you guys up to date on everything. We'll be back here next Tuesday again for the Bird's Eye View podcast. For Zach Berman, I'm Jeff McClain. Talk to you later.